Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
In today's episode of Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we're digging into some of the most scandalous moments in music history. We put together a list of scandals that span nearly 70 years and covers controversies, deaths, scams, crime, and outrageous behavior that drew media attention around the world. From John Lennon saying the Beatles were bigger than Jesus to Sinead O'Connor tearing up a picture of the Pope. The shocking trail of abuse left by total piece of garbage R. Kelly to Ozzy biting the head off of a bat. The circumstances of Sam Cooke's murder, to years of speculation over if Elvis really died at all. The Great White Concert Fire to the dumpster fire of the Fire Festival. Milli Vanilli getting caught lip-syncing to U2 giving you one of their albums whether you wanted it or not. We're covering a lot of ground in this one and some of it ain't pretty. Let the drama begin. What's up, everyone? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 71. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm talking about some of the most scandalous moments in music with my co-host and my really good friend, Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, and our show is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks and McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia. What's going on, brother?
Everything is good, man. The Phillies are in the playoffs, brother. I'm so happy for that.
I am excited. I am ready to go. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's great for just the city morale anyway, you know. But, you know, everything's good. What's going on with you? You went camping?
I did. We took the camper out this weekend, first time since Memorial Day weekend. So my wife was feeling good enough to get up and down the stairs, and it was really nice to get away for a couple days.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, it was nice, man. The weather was good. Yeah, you know, after it was raining here in New Jersey and Philadelphia for like a week straight, so
it was a mess. I felt like I was living underwater, right?
It was crazy, man. And you know, we had to take an extra week off. I had some other shit going on around
responsibilities, man.
Yeah, man. I had some. Well,
I'm questioning your dedication to this show, Mio.
I think I told you this, but they're the second largest Hindu temple in the world is in my town right now. It's like a mile from my house.
Oh, really?
And they have been having this 3-month festival where this music starts at 6:30 in the morning and it goes to 11 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. And it can be up to 100 decibels, which is the sound of basically a rock and roll stadium concert. And after weeks and weeks and weeks of people calling and complaining and nothing getting done, I organized like a whole shitload of people and went to a town council meeting this last week and complained. I had I had like signed statements from like 70 people, and I had like 15-20 people come with me and organize this whole thing and made a big,
because it's like noise pollution.
Yeah, dude, it's like it's so loud, man. I can hear it in my house with the windows closed. So
it's not Skinnered.
I said to the town council, I was like, imagine it. That's just 100 decibels is louder than a baseball game, and it's the sound of a rock concert. Imagine living next door to like the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion in Camden, and there's a music festival every day, and it starts at 6:30 in the morning, and it's all bands that you don't want to go listen to.
Yeah.
So I was being a community organizer and a social activist last week. That's why we skipped an extra week for the show.
Well, you know, God forbid you put a rock concert on and see what happens real fast, how fast it gets shut down.
Right. If I said I worship at the Church of Motorhead and I want to play my religious music 16 hours a day, it would be, people's opinions would change pretty fucking quick.
But the Church of Lemmy.
Yes. But, man, another great topic, dude. You've been really hitting it out of the park coming up with some of these ideas.
I mean, there's so many things we haven't touched yet. We have so many good ideas coming up on shows, but you know, this one, we were trying to figure something out. I was like, we never did like something on controversy, like weird little things happening in the music world.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we put it together we wanted to go across all the music. So we went, you know, I think the earliest ones in the 1950s, and there's some shit that's pretty recent. And then we were like all over the place in terms of like the types of scandals, and again, much like all these other shows that we do, we cover a ton of ground. There's going to be a bunch of shit that we're not going to get to, but you know, hey, we've got a lot here, and we got a lot of ground to cover.
We're going to give it our best shot here, see how far we can get going with all the controversy.
Yeah, man, there's some really interesting stuff in here, and I was doing a lot of reading. I mean, a lot of this stuff I knew a little bit about, but the more I dove into some shit, I was like, wow, as always, I learned a lot.
Well, I'm hoping to learn something tonight.
Yeah. All right. So let's just get started, man. So the first scandal I found that I want to talk about was the Payola scandal of the 1950s, man. And that was basically, you know, rock and roll had just started, and it was starting to take off, and 45s became a thing, and teenagers really became like the core audience of rock and roll. And so record labels basically were bribing DJs, were giving them money to play albums. And I found a couple statistics. So this is how quickly radio exploded. So in 1950, there was about 250 disc jockeys across the United States. Within 7 years, that number went to 5,000. So record label, you know, the industry just explodes. And then there was like a whole scandal with payola in like game shows and shit that started getting like a lot of attention.
Sure.
Congress started looking into it, and while they were looking into that, they started looking into music, and they found that all these record labels were paying DJs to promote shit. And I guess the biggest thing that came out of that, well, first of all, the FCC stepped in and they made that illegal. You couldn't do that anymore. But two really big names in music wound up taking the hit. The first one was Alan Freed. Alan Freed was the dude that pretty much came up with the term rock and roll.
Sure.
And the other guy was Dick Clark. They both got fired from their job. Yeah. Alan Freed got fired and he died within like a month.
Yeah.
And Dick Clark was another one that lost his job. So,
wow.
So that's pretty much payola, man. So it was like just an interesting, and it was like I said, it was scandal starting just when rock and roll was starting.
You know, when there's money to be made, there's scandals to be paid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've known about payola for a long time. I just think about all the songs that couldn't afford to be on radio back then. Like, how many songs did we miss out on? Or like, how many crappy songs did we get addicted to because we got forced to hear it, you know? And I think payola, you know, to a point still goes on now.
Sure. Instead of like payments, though, maybe the record DJs are getting concert tickets and all that other shit. And
it was like all through the 70s and the 80s, everybody was getting pay and blow.
Yeah, right.
You know, like,
yeah, sure. And I mean, in the 50s too, in the 60s, we talked about this in the doo-wop episode, like record labels were just like white people were just re-recording African-American artists. And it was like that shit was getting played on the radio and it was really shitty and scummy. And I think Dick Clark's pretty famous for not playing the white people versions of stuff, but it was still, he still took the, he took the fall here out of all this.
Well, I never knew that he took a fall out of all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good for him that he overcame all that, you know, like that could have ruined his whole career for the rest of his life.
Yeah. And you know what, man, we're talking about Alan Freed. I had to send you, I'm in a, like a Facebook group for like famous graves and it's always people just posting like tombstones. Alan Freed's tombstone looks like a giant jukebox cut out of granite.
Oh, right.
It's really cool. It's super cool looking. I'll have to send you a picture of it.
I do enjoy cool things like that.
It is very neat, man. That's such a fascinating group to be in. People always posting, you know, like where musicians are buried and shit like that.
Yeah, I find that bit, like, you know, headstones.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Totally cool.
All right. Just keep on rolling, man. The second one that I came up with, 1958. And we talked about this before, but this is Jerry Lee Lewis getting busted for marrying his cousin.
That was frowned upon in the 50s.
It was.
Nowadays, I don't know. And what's not for, you know, everything's now, you know, you're good with, you know.
And we talked about it in the Sun Records episode, right? So Elvis gets drafted into the Army, and Jerry Lee Lewis is really ready to become like the face of rock and roll. And he was 22. She was 13. It was his third marriage by the time he's 22.
He's out of his mind.
Yeah. And he was already still married to his second wife when this happened. And I get what it was really like. He went over to England to kind of like promote rock and roll. And he insisted on bringing her. And other people were like, dude, that's not a good idea. Don't bring her. And he was like, no. And he was ready to say she was a little older, except they forgot to tell her that that was what the lie was. And when they got over there, they got busted. And she was like, yeah, I'm married to him and I'm 13. And because she was like the daughter of somebody in his band.
Yeah, the bass player.
Yeah.
You ever see the movie they made?
Yeah.
Three Balls of Fire? It didn't age well at all. Winona Ryder played the Jerry Lee's wife. It didn't age well at all, man. It made it look like it was all okay that he married his cousin.
You know,
they romanticized it.
I remember you talking about that before when we did the Sun Records episode.
Yeah, I mean, how did they not lock him up?
I mean, it ruined his career, right? I mean, he just totally became derailed. And this was one of the first big, really big scandals, like involving a rock and roller.
Dude, he's out there in America somewhere playing tonight.
He's dead.
You know, like, is he dead?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah, he died recently.
Oh. Well, he was the killer.
He died in October last year. But it's about a year ago.
I don't know, man. I don't understand how hillbillies think, number one. You know, I'll never understand. I'm too much of a city folk, you know, to think that, you know, just even thinking about your cousin in a way, you know, I'm a Catholic, man, you know, like we get away with some crazy shit, but, you know, like with those Baptists, you know, down south, you know, shit, man, they kind of like groom kids. Like, they take, like, young girls and they groom them until they're 18 and they marry them off.
I'll just play it right now. We're going to be playing this a lot tonight. Shitbag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
But.
Great balls of fire.
Yeah, man. I was going to say, like, he wasn't a nice dude, but, man, he could play the fucking piano, dude. Here's a little bit of Great Balls of Fire.
Great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought of this morning. You came along and moved my honey. I've changed my mind. This love is fine. Great balls of fire. Kiss the baby. Feels good. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like a
of the show. Oh, you're fine. So kind.
Man, I still love that song. How many times I've heard it. Still love it.
Dude, it's amazing. Writing a hit record will get people to forget that he, like, child molested someone and, you know, whatever, you know? Like, Jerry Lee was a naughty motherfucker, man. He was the killer. He was everything that he said he was. And he's probably in hell right now.
And we talked about in the Sun Records too, man. Like, he was a session guy for all those dudes, and then finally just started ripping it and really kind of stepped into his own and broke out. But
he was a hell of a musician, you know. On top of it, he had a hell of I don't know, a reputation, a hell of an attitude, a hell of a, you know, story to him.
Yeah. All right, let's keep moving. This is the incident that I think created the whole idea to do the show, and that's 1964, and that's the murder of Sam Cooke.
Wow. How do we not get to our 71st episode and not talk us out Sam Cooke at all yet?
I know, dude. So if we're doing like 2 hours of show, that means we've got like 150 hours of music we've talked about, and we haven't played Sam Cooke yet. I fucking love Sam Cooke.
Dude, he was the beginning of it all, man. Before there was, like, you know, a term like rock and roll, there was Sam Cooke.
Yeah, it's the combination of, like, soul and rock music, and it just, yeah. There's a lot of his music you can listen to, and I just close my eyes and listen to it, and I'm like, it's just, it's so beautiful. It's so awesome. There's so much energy in it, and it's just great.
So many songs you don't even realize he has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's hear about his murder, Bruce.
Yeah, so, man, he was only 33 when he was murdered.
Wow.
And he was not only an amazing singer, but he was also really involved in the civil rights movement. And there's a Netflix documentary about his murder, which is really called, like, The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. It's really, really good, and it's worth watching. But he was involved in the civil rights movement. He was friends with Jim Brown, the football player,
sure,
and Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X. And he started his own record label and his publishing company. He was the first black artist to own his own label. And he was pretty much like, look, there's a lot of racism in the music industry, so I'm going to beat them at their own game. And I'm going to start a business, and I'm going to out business the racist white people. Because the music industry was racist as shit for decades.
He was way before Motown.
Yes, right.
You know, he was like Motown before there was Motown.
Right. Right. Guys like Smokey say that, like, Sam Cooke was what inspired him to become so involved in music. But the night he died in 1964, so he was murdered at the Hacienda Motel in Los Angeles. So he's out. He goes out to dinner, and he sees a woman at dinner, and he wasn't with his wife. He sees this woman named Elisa Boyer, and after dinner, they go to a nightclub, and she leaves the club with him, and it's like 2 a.m, and they're in his Ferrari, and he goes, she's like, I want to go home, and he's like, no, and this is the story, and he takes her to the Hacienda Hotel to have sex. According to her, they check in the hotel room. Sam Cooke throws her on the bed, starts tearing off her clothes. She tries to run into the bathroom and escape, and the door won't lock. And then for some reason, Sam Cooke goes in to take a leak. And when he goes in to take a leak, she grabs her clothes and she runs out the door of the hotel. And she runs to a telephone booth and she calls the police. Sam Cooke comes out of the bathroom, can't find her. His clothes are gone. So he goes and checks his car, doesn't see her. And he goes to the hotel and he starts banging on the door. He's wearing a suit jacket in one shoe, and that's it. And he starts banging on the door of the hotel, yelling, "Where's the girl? Where's the girl?" The manager's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So he starts breaking his shoulder into the door, and he breaks the door down, and he starts wrestling with the hotel manager. And she grabs a gun, and she shoots him in the chest.
Wow.
And then he goes like, "Lady, you shot me!" And he comes at her again. Yeah. So she picks up a broomstick and, like, beats him over the head, and he collapses, and he dies. So that was the story, but there's a lot of other scandals around it. So the first one is always been that he was silenced because he was so involved in the civil rights movement. Yeah. Even like Muhammad Ali was like, if this was anybody else, if this was a white person, the FBI would have been all over this shit.
Yeah.
Because they said when he was at his funeral, Etta James, the singer, said he was beaten so badly that his head looked like it was ready to come off. His hands were all mangled. His nose was broken. So she's just like, that. This does, something doesn't jive here.
Something happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was definitely doing something shady. He got caught up in it. And it cost him his life.
Yeah. He also... people who saw him that night at dinner said he had like a huge wad of cash on him, like a couple $1,000s, and that money was never found. The Hacienda Hotel where they went was also known as a place like you paid $3 an hour to stay there because it was like for hookers. Yeah. And the woman that killed him was arrested for prostitution a month later. And the woman that ran out of the room, I'm sorry, was arrested for prostitution. The woman that shot him had a record for being a madam for prostitutes. So they're like, maybe he thought it was she tried to rob him. Maybe the two women were in on it together. The woman that killed him, the woman that tried to, was in the room was also found, guilty of second degree murder a couple years later for killing her boyfriend. Another theory was his wife had something to do it. His wife, got remarried 3 months after Sam Cooke died and was some dude. She was having affairs too. And they said like that night or no, at his funeral, like the dude she was fooling around with showed up like wearing some of Sam Cooke's like his watch and shit like that.
No.
She married Bobby Womack, the soul singer. She married him.
Sure.
Like, 3 months after Sam Cooke. He was in Sam Cooke's band and married him like 3 months after Sam Cooke was murdered.
No.
And the last one was... the conspiracy was Alan Klein. And again, another dude we talked about in the Beatles and the Stones episode, because this dude was largely managing the Beatles when they broke up during the Let It Be sessions, and he ripped the Stones off out a ton of money. But he was Sam Cooke's manager, and he owned the rights to all of his music. And the rumor always was that Sam Cooke was not happy with this dude and was going to fire him, but he never got the chance because Sam Cooke died, and Sam Cooke never had a will. So this dude kept the rights to all of Sam Cooke's music after he died and got all the royalties from it. His family didn't get shit from all the royalties. So they've been like, maybe this dude had him killed. He was like, well, fuck that. You're not leaving me, man. I'll kill you and I'll make all the money.
No. That is insane to hear all that stuff about Sam Cooke, man.
Yeah. And he had a drug problem and some other, he wasn't perfect, but still really weird circumstances under which he died. Yeah, let's play something from Sam Cooke. I put A Change Is Gonna Come on here. So that he said that was like his version of, or his counter to Blowin' in the Wind by Dylan.
Let's give it a listen. I got a story about him and Blowin' in the Wind.
All right, cool. Here we go. Let's hear it. I want to hear the story.
A long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky.
Man,
beautiful.
I could play that whole song.
You mentioned a documentary on Amazon. There's an original movie called One Night in Miami. And what this film is about, it's a after party after Muhammad Ali won the heavyweight champion. And the after party was Malcolm, Jim Brown, Sam Cooke, Muhammad Ali. Now, this is before Muhammad Ali changed his name to Muhammad Ali. He was still Cassius Clay. And he just won the heavyweight champion, and they're having this meeting. And like Malcolm in this movie is like calling them all Uncle Toms, you know, really giving it to Sam Cooke, like hardcore. And he turns on, he's like, listen to this song, Blowing in the Wind. He's like, why does it take a white man to write this song when he's telling our story, you know? So like Malcolm in this movie, according to this movie, Malcolm like really opened his mind to like, you know, do more than songs like I love you, I love you, I love you, you know, like songs like that, and do something like we just listened to, like something a little bit deeper, you know, use your mind, your voice, your celebrityism to say something deep, you know.
There weren't a lot of musicians doing that kind of stuff, right?
Not at all.
Early rock and roll was real, you know, said, like you said, I love you, I love you, I love you kind of stuff. And yet maybe you had Dylan, and not a ton of guys were being like real political, like in the early days of music. And by 64, I mean, you know, Kennedy's already been shot and
yeah,
everything else, but still.
If you get a chance, check this movie out.
I came across it doing my research, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'll have to check that out.
It is good. It's like, I don't know what it's like to be any of those guys, especially in that time. But it's a good watch. It's a good movie.
Yeah, and the whole thing within a couple of years, right? I mean, Cassius Clay becomes Muhammad Ali. Jim Brown quits football. Malcolm X is murdered, and Sam Cooke is murdered.
Yeah.
Oh, that song is one of the most powerful. I'm almost speechless listening to it. No matter how many times I hear it, it just blows me away.
There's a, you know, I always judge a good performer by live albums or whatever. And Sam Cooke has two great live albums on Spotify. One of them is Live from the Copa in New York City. And one of them is come from the Harlem Square. And he brings it, you know, it just, I wish there was video along with it, like to see like the showmanship that he had, like that huge smile he had, you know, I just know it from pictures. I don't, you know, there's, you know, not much of it about Sam Cooke out there. It's just, he was dead so young. We missed out on him. Mostly.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah. He's one of my favorite soul singers, but. And all, I mean, shit, there we could have played any of...
Oh, my God.
Tons.
We're having a party.
Yeah.
Everybody's singing.
Yep.
Great song.
Yeah. Lots of great music, dude. I'm with you. I'm surprised that it took us this long to even talk about him. But, you know. All right. Let's keep rolling. 1966, the Beatles say they are... John Lennon says the Beatles are bigger than Jesus.
Yeah. He had a fresh mouth, John.
Yeah,
he would say anything just to piss people off, especially then.
Yeah. So in 1966, the London Evening Standard ran a series of articles on the Beatles. They did a profile on John Lennon, and they started talking about religion. And John Lennon goes, "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue about that. I'm right, and I'll be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary." So he said it in the U.S. and the U.K. It didn't really make any controversy. But when it comes in the U.S., this one dude puts it in like a magazine that he runs in the U.S. And then to sell copies of his magazine, he starts printing it and sending it to all the radio stations in the South. And like 30 radio stations across the country said they won't play any Beatles records anymore. One of a radio station in Birmingham, Alabama, rented a wood chipper and invited people to come and throw their Beatles shit into it. Another radio station in Nevada had bonfires and burned Beatles stuff. The Klan started protesting.
Can you imagine all the collectibles that got fucking destroyed?
Right.
Billions of dollars of 45s, original pressings.
And it was all that collectible shit that we talked about when we did their, because there were so many different like U.S. releases of albums and stuff like that. Mexico gets in on the game. They banned the Beatles from being played on any government-run stations. The Vatican started sounding off. And it was like, and they were on tour in the U.S. and they really did. They were like, this sucks because people were protesting.
Well, what do you back to say something crazy like that?
Right.
I mean, like I said, John was fresh.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of an asshole, you know, and, you know, came back and bit him in the ass, because if one thing that America loves is the Bible Belt, bro, that like, you know, maybe not in the city where I live or anything like that, but it runs a lot of the country.
Sure. Yeah, people take offense to stuff like that. I mean, in the '60s too, it's people down south didn't like that.
But you know what? John was just saying, like, I'm not sticking up for him. But the way that he was saying, you know, the way how Christianity was going, it was getting so unpopular. The Beatles were more popular than religion at the time. You know, he said he could have said, like, oh, the Beatles is bigger than TV. You know, the Beatles are bigger than, but he said that, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And the guy that put it in the magazine in the United States didn't, he was trying to be controversial and get a rise out of people, which really started pissing off Brian Epstein and their management.
Well, I'm sure,
and everything else.
I'm sure it affected concert sales and all kinds of crazy financial bullshit.
Yep. And just sticking with the Beatles, the next one I had in the list of scandals was, you know, a year later, 1967, the Beatles break up. I mean, it blows my mind that they were together for less than 10 years.
It's unreal, all the music they put out.
Just how, I mean, shit, we did that show we did on the Beatles and the Stones was like 4 hours long. We went through like their whole catalog. But yeah, there's so much going on in the Beatles world when they broke up, right? So like Beatlemania, like, you know, huge phenomenon and the fame. Brian Epstein died. The guys are getting mad at McCartney. Lennon is a junkie and he's starting to mess around with Yoko Ono's coming in. Yeah. George Harrison wants to do other shit. The Get Back project, you know, that Alan Klein dude gets involved and they just buckled under the weight of everything that was going on.
Coming from, like, not ever knowing what it's like to be a Beatle, but I know what it's like being a band. Bands aren't made to be together forever. You know, it is what it is. It's a shame that the Beatles themselves couldn't even live like regular people. It's like, you know, oh, the Beatles are breaking up made national news. It was like so many people were killed in Vietnam today. Oh, and the Beatles broke up. You know, that's how big they were.
Absolutely. We should probably play something from the Beatles.
Obladi oblada.
All right, let's do it.
That's such a Paul song.
Yeah, I know that song gets crapped on a lot, but
I don't care. I love it.
It's the Beatles, man. It's hard not to.
It's one of their, you know, I think most fun songs. You know, it's just gibberish, but it's fun. It bounces.
Sure.
You know?
Yep, I totally agree. All right.
But the Beatles breaking up was surely heartbreaking for billions of fans.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Like you said, national news. All right. The next scandal I have, too, is another band that made national news for a totally different reason, and that was the Sex Pistols dropping the F-bomb on television. The first time that the F-word was ever said on TV was the Sex Pistols, and we talked about this in our punk rock episode, which was the first episode we ever did for Pantheon, but so December 19th.
I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm saying the way they did it too on proper English
British
television,
the BBC,
you know, and it was just a crazy moment on TV that they caught, you know, they pushed, I forget who the host of the TV show was.
Bill Grundy.
But he start pushing their buttons,
mm-hmm.
and he got it. He wanted the punk rockers. He got it.
Yeah.
So we talked about this before on our show.
We did. We played the clip of it actually on the show when we did the punk rock episode. So they they get called on a show called Today because Queen was supposed to do it, but Freddie Mercury had a dentist appointment, and Queen and the Sex Pistols were on the same record label, and they said that the host got drunk beforehand, and he was kind of being of a dick, and he was like talking to the audience, and he was kind of dissing the band, and the Sex Pistols had their whole entourage on the stage with them, and in the entourage was Susie Sue from Susie and the Banshees, and she goes like, "Hey, I've always wanted to meet you," to the host, and he's like, "Oh, did you really? Well, let's get together afterwards." And Steve Jones thought he was hitting on him, and he calls him like a dirty old man, and then the host is like, "Okay, why don't you say something else?" And Steve Jones says, "Like, you dirty fucker," and and then he just keeps like, you're a rotter, you're a dirty fucker, ain't you? Like, you're Boston.
And it
ends, and then it was like, that was being broadcast in London, and it was the front page of the paper.
Yeah, it might as well have been like on the 5 o'clock news.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. And that was unheard of on
like
TV.
Steve Jones, you ever see Steve Jones' shirt that he has on? He has like a pair of tits on his t-shirt. I don't know how he even got on TV with that shirt on.
That's funny.
But they wanted to see what punk rock was about. They gave it to them.
Yeah, and that made them public enemy number one, and totally like cemented their whole, how they were perceived and what they stood for. And like, when you think of the Sex Pistols, just punk rock, like F you, and F was, everybody.
Like, the interview was like mayhem. Like, they're all talking, and then Johnny Rotten is like saying little things underneath his breath. And then they come through. It's like, "What'd you say?" "Oh, nothing. Next question."
Yes.
it's Johnny great. Rotten's the best.
It's on YouTube. It's worth checking out, or you can go back and listen to the punk rock episode we did, or we did a whole show on the Sex Pistols too. But, all right. That's 1976. 1977. Did Elvis really die?
Ooh.
And, August 16th, 1977, Elvis Presley died at Graceland. And, man, this was like, for decades, people speculated that he never really, he died. He was still alive.
He was, I always thought he was taken by the aliens.
That was part of the thing.
Like, like in the Men in Black movie.
Right.
Like, oh, did they take the aliens take Elvis? No, man, he just went home. He was an alien.
There was always speculation that he, he was like an FBI informant, and the mafia found out and they were going to kill him and all this other weird shit. And
Elvis was a weird dude, man. He was just drugged out all the time and in his own world.
Yeah.
He was aloof to anything else but Elvis land.
Yep.
You ever see that movie, Elvis and Nixon, Nixon and Elvis?
Yes.
Whatever. Yeah. So that is hysterical.
Yeah.
That movie, to our listeners, if you ever want to watch something great, watch that movie. It is fantastic. But, Elvis was the king of rock and roll when he died. It shook the nation. It was like people's childhood dying. It was like the end of the innocence. It was like Elvis was before JFK getting killed. So he was like the symbolism of youth of the 50s and, the innocence of the time.
Yeah. And it was like what the tabloids you'd see in the supermarket. It was like every month there was an article about where somebody was seeing Elvis. And it's even in... in Ghostbusters, they asked the Ghostbusters, like, how is Elvis?
Is Elvis, seen him? And how's he doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think people are just trying to hold on to something to keep Elvis's memory alive. Like, I've been to Graceland, and it was a great trip, and I have an Elvis tattoo to remind me of the great trip. And, you go to Elvis's house. And there is we can have a whole show on this, maybe. Who is the king of rock and roll? But I've been to Elvis's house. And it's clearly that Elvis is the king of rock and roll, like, pure at the end. Like, he's been dead for what, 46 years?
46 years, yeah.
And people are, like, still go, like, pilgrimaging to his house every year for different occasions. And I hope to go back soon. You know, I'll definitely go back. You have not been there, have you?
Yeah, I have. We enjoyed it. We didn't. I probably could have spent a lot more time there because as my wife and I were in Nashville, we drove all the way out to Memphis and we did like Graceland and Sun Studios and Beale Street, like, all in one day, and then drove all the way back to Nashville. But
oh wow,
yeah,
I spent like a whole day at Graceland because, like, across the street from Graceland, there's like all these exhibits, and they have the airplane, Lisa Marie airplane on display, and his bus, and, you know, all of his cars,
yeah,
all of his suits.
You can shoot down to Tupelo, Mississippi, and see where he was born.
Yeah,
I would definitely, yeah, I would go back and check it out again if I'm in Memphis again.
I definitely suggest you checking out Graceland, and he's buried in the backyard.
Right. Well, and that was part of the speculation, too, right? The spelling of his last name on his tombstone, you know, and created controversy.
Elvis, he spelled Aaron wrong. And what he did was, Aaron was his middle name, but he starts spelling Aaron like they say it in the Bible, with two A's.
Yeah.
So that's why he changed it to that.
I did not know that.
Elvis was a Jesus freak.
Elvis was
a freak. He was a freak about all religions. He was on a search.
We, you know, every Sunday morning, my wife and I are driving to church. We, the Elvis stations, all his gospel stuff, and there's a lot of it. He put out a lot of gospel music.
Oh yeah,
that was, and, like, his first love, though. That's right. That's how he grew up. And
I think all those Southern dudes, that's how all their first love is. You know, like, even like we're talking about Sam Cooke. You know, like, all his first of music was, you know, religious style music, you know.
All right. Johnny Cash and Ray Charles and a lot of those guys, all that stuff.
They all started doing, like, they all started from doing original, like, not original, but doing all hymns.
Gospel music and...
Yeah.
Going from gospel stuff to the complete opposite end of the spectrum is 1982, Ozzy Osbourne bites the head off of a bat.
Ozzy,
man.
I mean,
oh, you know what? We didn't play a fucking Elvis song, and shame on us. Hang on.
Shame, shame, shame.
Yes, I put a Suspicious Minds on here. Here,
let's do it.
Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say?
That's a live version. Man. That's from Elvis, from Elvis in Memphis.
Wow. I mean, if you ever want to see the awesomeness of Elvis, watch Elvis in Hawaii, man. He is the king of rock and roll.
I really enjoyed the episode that we did on the Elvis comeback special.
Yeah, we, you know, that one of my favorite parts of Elvis history was that special.
Yeah, that was a really cool story to learn. And we learned that Colonel Decker from the A-Team played tambourine in the band. But the the stuff when he's in the boxing ring, man, so that's some of my favorite Elvis.
That's the real stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's just straight up, stripped down rock and roll. And he just, like we said, he just comes back and just shows everybody why he's the king.
It's a shame that he couldn't get away from the Colonel.
Yep.
Worked
him to death.
And, you know, again, that Elvis movie was awesome. Go check it out.
It was pretty good, the one with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Colonel Tom Parker, also a total shitbag, but we can get him too here. Shitbag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, now let's move on to Ozzy biting the head off the bat. and
has he bit heads off of a lot of things?
He did. He did like the Doves before that.
Yes.
Man, I was not into Ozzy when I was younger, and something about all this just
I was so into Ozzy growing up. Oh yeah.
I think it was high school. I started to listen to a couple of. I think I bought Bark at the Moon or Blizzard of Oz. I bought one of his albums when I was in high school.
Oh, I was listening to that shit when I was like 12, 13 years old. Oh yeah, we had it on vinyl. Oh, all me and my neighbors, we'd listen to all the Black Sabbath records and, like, you know, just all the evilness of it all. You know,
I mean, yeah, this shit was like right when the Satanic Panic is coming up, and it's like, you know, just heavy metal music and Dungeons and Dragons make you go crazy and all this other shit. And just, he was at a stage in Des Moines, Iowa, doing a concert, and somebody threw a bat on stage. He thought it was a toy, and he bit the head off. And he's like, you read interviews with him, and he's like, oh, and then this disgusting, horrible, salty fluid started in my mouth, and I realized that it wasn't a toy. And
he was just bombed out of his.
Total lunatic.
He's a lunatic. I mean, he's getting ready to pump up iron and get back on the road, I heard.
Man, he's got to be. It's over for him. You know,
I keep on seeing my Facebook feeds that he's going to make a comeback.
Okay. I mean, shit. I mean, AC/DC said they're coming back out on the road, too. And I was like, I wrote them off. Like, Brian Johnson's, like, deaf. And they're still going to come back out on the road. But the hell do I know, you know?
Bands never die. They just get new singers.
Right. Well, when Ozzy, too, like, after he did that, he had to go through 3 weeks of rabies shots. And he got rushed to the hospital afterwards. And went through all the shit that comes with all that kind of stuff.
Just another story with Ozzy.
One of like dozens and dozens and dozens of crazy Ozzy stories.
I'm sure everybody knows about Ozzy biting a head off a bat.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's one person that doesn't know about that.
I think I knew about that story before I knew any of his music, that he was just
this
crazy man. And
The nuns at my school were having a fit when I wore an Ozzy Osbourne shirt the gym day.
I'm sure they were.
They did, man. And now I couldn't understand it.
They probably thought you were going to go outside and bark at the moon. So here's, let's listen to Bark at the Moon.
Yes. But yeah, Ozzy is everything wicked in metal. I think that Osbourne show killed his rep. Like, it ruined his whole mystique, and it just made him look, you know, it made him look like a dumb dad.
I totally agree. Yeah, I don't think I ever watched one episode of that show, and I don't ever need to.
Man, I remember how big it was. Even at the bar, we had it on. Like, I don't remember what nights it came on, but we would have it on that night. It came on MTV. That was like the first celebrity reality show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need that to be his legacy, but
it's a shame. It will go down on it.
That was 1982. How about in 1984, Marvin Gaye was shot and killed by his father after he got in an argument in between his parents. Man, just another really weird, tragic story.
Weird story.
Yeah.
It is weird. His father was just... His father didn't even get charged with murdering him. He got charged with self-defense.
Yeah. And that's where the scandal, I think, is, too, because his dad was a preacher, and his dad was also a cross-dresser. And all that other kind of shit. Actually, his given name, his last name was Gay, like G-A-Y. And Marvin added the E to the end of it because people were making fun of him, saying, like, oh, your dad's
sure, gay. Sure, his whole life.
Picking on him. Wow.
Can we hear a little bit of the story?
Yeah, dude. So Marvin, he comes out of a tour of Europe. It's like kind of his resurgence, like the sexual healing tour. And he moved in with his parents to help his mom recover from kidney surgery. And him and his dad just, they never got along. And they tried to stay away from each other the whole time. And the sad thing is that I didn't know until I was researching this, is that Marvin Gaye bought the gun for his dad as a Christmas present. Yeah. And they, his dad was always tough on Marvin Gaye and his siblings, and always said, if any of you ever lay a hand on me, I'll shoot you. I'll kill you if you ever touch me.
Wow, and his parents, maniac.
Yeah. And his parents got in an argument over like a missing, they couldn't find an insurance paper or something. And he just kept, Marvin Gaye Sr. just kept laying into Marvin Gaye's wife or mom. And Marvin Gaye basically got in the middle of it and was like, hey, man, like, you know, shut up. And they got in a shouting match, and then it got physical. And the dad walked out of the room, got the gun out of his bedroom, and came in, walked back into Marvin Gaye's room, just shot him point blank in the chest and killed him.
Unreal.
And killed him. Right. And
I mean, he doesn't even have any emphasis for his own kid.
Right.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, man. Another dude that just, man, the music that he came up with, and the story of music is just littered with people that we got ripped off. We didn't get to hear stuff because of these tragedies that happen.
Dude, play What's Going On.
Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs.
Man, the layers of voices on there.
The Funk Brothers, right? The legendary Funk Brothers.
Wow, what a great song. I mean, I think it goes down to one of the greatest recordings ever. It's up there.
It's an awesome song. And
it's a perfect recording.
What's the story that James Jamerson was so drunk he was laying on his back? He couldn't even stand up.
Yeah.
He was playing that.
Yeah. He was down the bar and, they were like, get him down here, do baseline for this. We gotta cut this record. So he was wasted, and they dragged him in and threw him on the floor, and they gave him his bass. It's like, come on, let's go, let's go. And he just laid there on the floor and played it. And you listen to that bass line, it's flawless.
I noticed that. Ever since we did that episode on the Funk Brothers, man, I hear it every time I listen to Motown now. I pay attention to the music.
Oh, yeah. I was bragging about our Motown episode this week to a few customers. People that don't even know anything about the Funk Brothers. You know, if you were a new listener to us and you want to know something about Motown, we did a whole Motown episode.
Absolutely. You know what, man? I think I messaged you this, but I was at a party at my mom's house, and I was talking to my uncle, and we were talking. He's asking about the show, and I said something about the Funk Brothers, and he's like, oh, that. And my aunt was sitting next to it, and she's like, my aunt was a postal worker. She's retired now, but she was like, the guy that made that documentary used to come into the post office all the time. The fuck's his name? Slutsky.
Yeah, he's a local guy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, he used to come in all the time and like give me all this like Motown stuff and all this shit to check out. He's like, super nice guy. I'm like, man, that's super cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. I mean, I watched a documentary about him and what he went through to make that documentary. And, you know, so I'm just glad someone told the stories of the Funk Brothers.
Yeah, I totally agree. And going back to Marvin Gaye, man, just the senseless way that in which he died, man. Just like, fuck, like trying to break up a fight between your parents. It's just
his father out of his fucking mind, dude.
Yeah.
They should have threw his father in fucking jail. But what do I know?
Marvin Gaye Sr. can also be a
shitbag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun. All right.
I don't know. Senseless.
Yep. Yep. A lot of shit. So many of these stories and music, senseless. How about something a little lighter? And let's jump ahead to the night to 1990. And that's when Milli Vanilli was caught lip syncing.
Oh. You know, people all know about the lip syncing part, but you know what people don't know about what they also faked? They faked dancing on their records. All the dancing they did on their records, they faked it.
This was a kind of a sad story to me as I started reading into it a little bit. They became the biggest joke in music.
God, now people are famous on fucking Snapchat by lip syncing to somebody's fucking song and them getting billions of likes and getting sponsors.
Right.
What's going on?
But these two dudes, man, so they were like French and German, and they were kind of like poor people, and this German record producer just saw something and was like, I'm gonna make you stars. Man, and that, like, it, I don't know if you weren't alive then, I don't think you realized how big that, like, they were huge in like the late 80s.
They were huge.
Man.
They won the Grammy. Right. They won Best New Artist. You know, they were huge. They had two. They had like three big songs.
That song, "Girl, You Know It's True," was in the top 100 for 26 weeks in a row. So it was like,
"Girl, I'm gonna miss you." That was a big song.
"Blame It on the Rain."
Yeah.
And I guess these guys started going on. They were doing interviews, and reporters were hearing like their real thick German and French accents, and going like, wait, where's that accent going in the music? And they were on the first Club MTV tour, and it was a couple times where the vocals just like they just cut out or they started looping.
Yeah, it starts skipping and looping and doing all this weird shit, and you know, and they would run off stage.
they just ran off the stage while still playing.
And, you know, and that's when it all started, and after they won the Grammy, the pressure got too much, and they had to come out and say that they lip sync on, you know, they didn't sing on the record.
They insisted to the producer that they wanted to sing for real on the next record, and it got, and the producer had to own it and come out and basically be like, yeah, they never really sang on it. And
they were on Arsenio Hall when they came out and sang their own songs. And it was the one dude was okay, but the other guy, his accent was so thick, he couldn't even get it out, like the English phrase, you know, it was just really bad.
And it totally ruined them. They're the only Grammy that was ever revoked. So, and the radio just like stopped playing their music. They got dropped from the record label. They tried.
You know what we're going to do on our show? We're going to play them.
We're going to play them, and I have the album they recorded, like, for real.
Okay, but you got me singing Blame It on the Rain in my head.
All right, hang on.
Did you ever see the guy who sang the songs?
Yes.
He's like this middle-aged black guy, bald, you know, something that they would never put on MTV.
So,
you know.
So they did put out an album as themselves, as Rob and Fab, and it only sold like 2,000 copies ever. I'll play some of that in a second. They actually started, they tried doing a comeback album as Milli Vanilli, but with them singing, but it was never released because Rob from Milli Vanilli died of an overdose in 1998.
Yeah, and I remember.
Then the other dude started doing an album with one of the guys who was really singing on the album.
Jesus.
A guy named Jonathan Davis, not the guy from Korn. And but that never came out.
Blame it on the rain.
But that that dude died of COVID in 2021, so I don't believe that album never got released either. But YouTube does have the guy's the Robin Fab album on here. So here's a song called "We Can Get It On." Okay.
I want to hear the other guy sing.
Oh, here. Oh, well. Pick it up.
No. I'm good. Shit. Yeah, that shit was bad. It's a shame. Who can you blame them, though? Like, who do you blame, them or the producer guy?
You blame it on the rain. That's the only thing you can do.
Of course you do.
Right. Kind of walked right into that one. How about you want to take a little break right here, and then let's do it. We'll pick back up and we'll bring it home. I got 7-8 more of these things on here, and cool. We'll take it from there.
All right, yo, stick around.
We'll be back. Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
We're talking a lot about scandals, but you know what's not scandalous? Wearing a really good pair of socks. That's why Prisoners of Rock and Roll is so happy to be sponsored by Boldfoot Socks. There's nothing scandalous about supporting an American company that makes a great product right here in America with materials grown in America. And on top of that, they give 5% of all their proceeds to veteran charities. So when you're done listening to us, head on over to boldfoot.com and check out all the awesome styles and different types of socks that they have. That's boldfoot.com. Thanks so much for sticking with us. I got, maybe like 10 more scandals we can touch on. We can just keep plowing through these. The first one I had, man, 1990, Two Live Crew is determined to be obscene, and a couple of the guys get arrested.
I mean, you write a song like Pop the Coochie, you know,
right?
What do you expect? You know?
So that was, they were the poster child for obscenities and, so their album has a parental advisory sticker on it, and they were from Florida. So in Florida, the Broward County Sheriff's Office listens to the album. He writes down all of the lyrics, And he goes to the county court and says, can you declare this album obscene? And they do. So then the sheriff goes to every music store in the county and warns them and says, like, hey, man, this is, you can't, it's illegal to sell this because it's offensive. And one of the, there was a record store owner who sold the album, and he was arrested for selling the album to an undercover police officer. And then 3 days later, the band is playing in Florida, and they got arrested. Luther Campbell and Chris Wong were both arrested for obscenity for playing this album or playing these songs live. And a court overturned it, the ruling that it was obscenity, and then the county appealed it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court wouldn't hear it. But just crazy that you know, in the 90s, dudes were getting arrested for playing music.
I mean, just look how far we've come in a short time, like how music is like was so offensive, and now, you know, that was offensive to Black people, and now like Nicki Minaj is on the fucking morning show like talking about her pussy,
right?
You know, like it's just unreal.
Yeah, unreal. I never liked Two Live Crew. I just, but it was interesting.
No, but you know, fight... what right is right, you know, and I don't know. It's like they are offensive. That's why they're Two Live Crew. It's,
right. That was what their whole
thing is. It is what it is.
Right.
But again, you know, don't decide for people what they can and what they can't listen to.
I totally agree. Yeah. Crazy that like a dude working in a record store was getting arrested for shit like that. But, and his charges were dismissed. But yeah, none of their music ever did anything for me. But
no. But, you know, I remember it happening, and they did Band in the USA, and Springsteen said, sure, go for it.
Oh, I totally forgot about that, too.
Yeah, the Band in the USA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's the crazy thing about Bruce Springsteen. He was all like, you know, Ronald Reagan, don't use Born in the USA during your speeches, but hey, Two Live Crew, it's okay for you to sample my song.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce Springsteen's the man.
That's a great call, man. I had totally forgotten about that version of that song. 1991. How about the Guns N' Roses riot? Guns N' Roses, man, they had a long...
There's always a riot with them. That's part of the going to the GNR show.
Right. I paid for this ticket, man. I better see a goddamn riot.
I'd get a t-shirt and a riot.
Yep. They were on stage in St. Louis. The band was playing Rocket Queen. Axl saw a fan taking pictures. He started yelling at security to confiscate the camera. And when security didn't, he jumped off the stage and tackled the dude himself. And then when he got back up on the stage, he goes, well, thanks, you're the lame-ass security. I'm going home. And he threw the microphone down and he walked off. And that started a three-hour riot in St. Louis.
He's out of his mind.
Yeah. But if you look in the liner notes for the User Illusion albums and the thank yous, it says "fuck you, St. Louis" in there because of this. They were they didn't play there again till 2017. They were banned from playing in St. Louis for.
Yeah, I'm sure. I remember the riot happening.
Yeah,
but you know, every couple of years, GNR has a riot. There's one in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Back in early 2000s.
I remember somebody asking me to go to that show, and I was like, no way, because he ain't going to show up.
No, he didn't show up, and people fucking went ape shit.
He was at a Knicks game instead of performing. Everybody was in the Spectrum waiting for him. And he had the riot when James Hetfield got burnt when the pyrotechnics went off on him, and they refused, they wouldn't take the stage early, and there was a riot. Yeah, it was interesting when I wanted to add them to the notes, I had to look up which riot I was going to talk about.
But that's what I'm saying. There's so many riots that Axl started.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let's play but a little
that's
bit.
That's why we love him. That's why we love him.
That's right. I mean, shit. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, man. It's Guns N' Roses. Here's a little bit of Rocket Queen. This is the song they were playing when the riot, when he jumped off the stage.
I'm not
That whole album, one of the greatest albums ever. Yeah, top to bottom, man. It is just a an awesome rock and roll album.
Yeah, it's one of the best. You know, it's so grungy before it was grunge. You know, like it was just dirty LA scumbag fucking music. I don't know.
Yeah, at some point, if we ever do a show on, like, you know, albums that are just perfect from front to back, that's totally one for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I just want to hear the stories of the recording of that album. You know, there's got to be some mayhem behind the recording of those songs. I mean, just Rocket Queen alone, we know that Axl had sex with some woman.
Yeah.
And they recorded it and her having an orgasm on the record.
Yep. Yep.
From the beginning, they were controversial, you know?
The next one that is, speaking of controversy, man, I had to go to YouTube. We had to go to YouTube for this one because it's not on streaming services. 1992, Body Count. Debut album has a song on it called Cop Killer.
I had it.
I did too.
Yeah, I saw them on that tour.
I remember you saying that.
And yeah, I saw them at the TLA.
I mean, and that was, we talked about this a little bit in one of the other episodes. I think I saw the music in 1992, but it was like, you know, all black guys playing in a heavy metal band. And,
yeah,
you know, Ice-T was always into heavy metal, right? He sang with Slayer on the Judgment Night soundtrack. Yeah. But that song got so much. I mean, shit, the president was talking about it.
It's, hey, man, Ice-T reaches everybody. You know, when the president has a minute to, like, comment about just a song, that's pretty powerful shit.
Yeah, and again, when you got like just the state of music now, the things that people, they celebrate and they play, you know, Nicki Minaj or shit like that. But
no, but it's great. You know, Ice-T's been a cop on TV for fucking 20 years,
right?
You know,
and he had that famous quote, like, you know, if you believe I'm a cop killer, you believe David Bowie's really an astronaut.
Yeah.
But
he's a smart dude. He's a really smart guy.
Yeah. And he made the decision to pull it off of the album. He said, like, the record label didn't do it, but they were under a shit ton of pressure to do it. He said executives at the record label were getting death threats and all kinds of other crap, like crazy that was
going on. I'm sure. Trust fund babies were getting cut off if they didn't take the song off the album.
And it's still, you know, it's still not on Spotify.
Yeah, I don't blame them. You know, I don't know. Like, fuck, the police is still on Spotify.
Right. But it's, you know, it is on YouTube. So here's a little bit of it. I haven't listened to that song in 20 years.
I know. It's catchy. It has a good beat and you can dance to it.
Skip that one at my wedding. Damn it.
Yeah. I missed that at my bar mitzvah.
Yeah. They're a really interesting band. Just such a punk sound to them. And
they're great. They were a hardcore band.
Yeah.
You know, I seen them. They were really hardcore. When I saw them, the police were outside the venue protesting and they're handing out these like pamphlets, and Ice-T gets the pamphlet and he's up on stage and he's reading it and he's pointing out all like the spellings that are incorrect and the grammar is all fucked up. He's like, can't you fucking motherfuckers in Philadelphia speak correctly?
That's funny.
But it was an interesting time in music history.
Yep. All right, and then the same year, too, another huge moment, controversial, was Sinead O'Connor goes on SNL, and she tears up a picture of the Pope.
What a wackadoo.
Yeah, so she was performing Bob Marley's War, and she replaced some of the lyrics about child abuse, And she looks right in the camera and says, fight the real enemy. And she tears up a picture of the Pope. And she said the picture was it was actually her mom's. It was like in her mom's like bedroom. And she took it when her mom died and was like looking for an opportunity to tear it up.
You know, I get what Sinead was saying. I dig what she was pointing out, but the way she did it was really bad. I mean, what she said was like, you know, the really thing to fight against is all the child molestation that happened in the Catholic Church through decades and decades. You know, that's what she was pointing out. The way she did it really sucked, you know, and to like, I don't know. I was very offended. I'm a Catholic, but I'm also a punk rocker and I'm against everything. So, you know, I get what she was doing. I get it.
It's weird to watch too, because when she's done, it's dead silent. Like the camera pans out, because they said like Lauren Michaels was like, holy shit. And Tullet said like, do not put on the applause sign after the song was over.
Is dead quiet. I remember watching it. And I thought it was like a part of the fucking SNL skit thing, you know? And then I was like, oh no, that was something just happened there.
And so the next week too, Joe Pesci was the host. And he actually, he got the picture and he taped it all back together and he walked out on stage with it. And he said something like, you know, if this was last week when I was there, I would have smacked it in her face. You motherfucker, you.
You motherfucker, you. You motherfucker. But she went and played the Bob Dylan anniversary concert at Madison Square Garden a week later.
And played the same song.
And she got up there and sang and she got booed. They like booed the hell out of her.
Yeah, she walked off the stage crying, and Kris Kristofferson was like sticking up for her, telling her like hang in there and shit like that.
He's such a great guy. He's Kris, you know, what are you gonna say?
Right.
Hey lady, you fucked your career up. You did it to yourself, lady.
Yep. All right, the next two of these, man, these are uncomfortable, but these are both like, because these are involving child abuse. And the first one was, you know, 94, Michael Jackson was accused of abusing children. And I don't even feel comfortable getting into all this shit, man. But there was all kinds of allegations. You know, he paid off like up to $15 million for the one kid, and he was, I mean, shit. You talk about like fall from grace, man. He was.
It was like after that, it was like a bonfire of like downfall and weirdness.
Yeah. And you know what's really shitty is, I was looking at some of the stuff and I didn't want to get too far into it, but it was like 93, LaToya Jackson comes out and goes like, I know my brother's a pedo and that he's paid off kids. I have proof and I'll release it if you give me $500,000. And it was like, you know, there's child abuse going on and you won't do anything about it unless you get paid. So you're another piece of shit.
But like, you know, not for nothing, these parents are just handing their kids over to Michael Jackson. You know, it's not normal. Oh yeah, it's Michael Jackson. Yeah, well, you know what, there's other pop stars out there too. They're not having pajama parties too with little kids.
It's really gross. Like all the whatever that Finding Neverland, the documentary, it's really
that disturbing. Was disgusting.
Yeah.
I really had a problem that they put that out, tell you the truth. Like the kid that was being molested went through step of the molestation. I thought it was like a pedophile's dream come true, the watch on HBO. You know, I was like, this, I turned it the fuck off. I was like, hey, this is the, like, HBO went a little bit too far. Like, some pedophile can watch this and get off on it. You know? Yeah,
it's gross. Like, we just watched, there's a documentary on Netflix about like all the abuse in the Boy Scouts that went on for like decades.
Yeah.
And some of it was like, it was really hard to watch. Like, and I can't square that up in my head that Michael, like, I'm not a big fan of Michael Jackson's music. And I think that just overshadows everything to me, that I can't separate the two of them.
again, Michael Jackson was a target. I'm not sticking up for him. You know, he's a product of abuse himself.
Yeah, and that's right.
You know,
textbook.
That's the ultimate. Yep. That's the ultimate thing about it. He was abused, and look what he did.
And it just, it becomes a cycle that just continues. And,
but people, but I don't, and the parents have to be blamed too, though. They like happily give their kids to Michael Jackson. And I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. As I was putting my notes together for this, I started reading some stuff and I was like, dude, I can't get into the details. You know, like the one kid had a description of his Michael Jackson penis, and it was just like, it was too much, man. Just as a fucking human being, as a parent, I couldn't do it.
It will always go down in music history being a really dark moment in music history. There's nothing to say about it, bro. It's fucking god awful.
Yeah, I don't even want to play one of his songs. It just bothers me so much.
You know what, though? I know it going like that, but dude, I love Michael Jackson. I love him. I think his music is fucking fantastic. And if we're just looking at his ability to make music, he was brilliant. Outside of that, he's a shitbag, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But looking at his music and everything that he did, he was brilliant.
Well, I think it was kind of funny, like, not funny, but, you know, he had a song called Heal the World. And it's like, and then he's doing all this horrible. Let me play a little bit of that, because it's just the irony of it, that he's doing all this horrible stuff.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. And this place be much brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry.
I can't. I just, man, it's just makes me
most
mad.
Worst,
little kids.
The worst part of all, the worst part all of it is that song is an awful song.
Yeah.
That is a god awful song. Ugh. I don't know. It's not for me to fucking decide, Bruce.
Yeah. Oh, he's in hell too.
He may be.
And then the other piece.
Right next to Liberace.
The next one who's going to go there when he's gone is R. Kelly. And this is another dude that I couldn't. There's been a couple times where something has happened with him, like the court case, and it's been in like our music news, and we've just skipped it because I was like, I don't even want to talk about him.
Why don't you like give us a little?
Yeah. So
what
he's been in trouble a lot for shit with kids, and you know, some of the really rough stuff was the singer Aaliyah. He married her. She was 15. And he was in his 20s, and she lied on the marriage certificate. He was, there was a video floating around of him sexually abusing and urinating on an underage girl. He was caught with all kinds of child pornography. He was accused of intentionally giving a woman an STD. He was arrested, federal charges of sexual exploitation of a child, child pornography, trafficking, kidnapping, child labor, obstruction of justice, and racketeering. He is currently in prison serving a 31-year sentence for all the shit he did to children. So,
I didn't know he was in jail. Yeah. I didn't know it was like 31 years. Wow.
Yeah, he's in federal prison. So,
what a douchebag.
Yeah, he had a long history of doing.
And so many people came forward.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Here's a little bit. Here's a little bit of Bump and Grind from R. Kelly.
Nice.
But there is something that I must confess to you. I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and grind. With a little bump and grind.
That's making me mad too. The lyrics sound really gross in lieu of everything that he was arrested for.
Dude, remember we were talking about something about how R&B was at its lowest in the 90s?
Yeah, yep.
Like, that's just prime example how bad 90s R&B was.
There's no soul in that, man. It's just like,
no.
Yeah. You take that, you go from Sam Cooke to that. That's a really far,
yeah,
far way. One, two. I got three more.
Cool.
The first one, 2003, the Station Nightclub Fire, Great White.
Oh.
So they were playing at the Station Nightclub in Rhode Island, and pyrotechnic display goes off, lights the acoustic foam in the walls and the ceiling, and the entire building burns down in less than 6 minutes, and 100 people die.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
That, dude, I remember that happening.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, I'm like, that's me. That could be me in a club watching a band. You know, I was so devastated for those people.
Yeah, we're like, in the, you know, the crowd was, it was, there were more people in there that it could hold. The, when the fire breaks out, one of the bouncers, they were like blocking the exits and saying like, no, man, this is the band's exit. And, there was a whole bunch, like there was no sprinkler systems, the fire alarm.
Yeah, but go to the codes were totally.
Yeah.
Whoever owned that place, I hope they went to jail.
He did.
Fuck. You know,
he did. He went to jail for 15 years, and the tour manager pled guilty to 100 counts of involuntary manslaughter, and he did 15 years in jail as well.
Yeah, because it was his call to do the pyrotechnics.
Correct. Right. And the whole thing was videotaped. Right. There was a dude.
Yeah, I've seen it. No, I've seen it.
Crazy. The band did start playing a couple. Like they were doing some shows after that, and they were raising money for the families of the people that died. But you know, they never
couple guys in the band died.
Yeah.
One of their original guitar players died. Yeah. I remember that.
They were playing a song called Desert Moon, which they never played again live, but I'll play a little bit of that. Yeah.
What a crappy band. They suck. They do, man. I never liked them.
Yeah, they're okay. I mean, they're not a top tier hair band, but
yeah, they don't deserve to be on our hair band countdown.
Once Bitten, Twice Shy was all right.
That's not even their song. That's a cover.
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Isn't what they made that.
I just fucking killed it for you. Well, well, shame on a lot of people for that incident. There was more than just one person to blame that shit on.
Right. And people that just wanted to go hear some rock and roll music, you know, 100,
they were the 100, ones.
100 people died. Just,
you know, yeah.
Sad. All right. I got two more. This is so much pleasant stuff we're talking about. Like people dying in fires and child molestation and murders. And this one's a little lighter, but in 2014, U2 came out with the album Songs of Innocence, and it was released exclusively on iTunes, and the album was automatically downloaded into everybody's iTunes account, and you couldn't even delete it. So
what
it
was a like weird.
You were getting it so whether weird. You wanted it or not.
I was like really like, oh my God, new U2 album, this is fucking great. And then I listened to it, and it was fucking awful. I think the only way they could get away was like giving it away for free,
right?
Because it was that. I think they knew how awful it was.
Yeah. They took so much crap that Apple had to come up with like a special, like you had to go to like a web page and be like, do you really, really, really want to delete this? And after a ton of backlash, because it's crazy that they forced it on your phone or your iTunes and then you couldn't get rid of it.
But does it really fucking matter?
Yeah, well,
at the end of the day, does it really fucking matter? Like, people went through all this fucking shit. I don't want to know my thing. Like, does it really fucking matter?
Yeah, not in the context of what happened to R. Kelly or the people that went to the Great White Fire or all that.
Exactly, right, exactly.
But
I remember how everybody got so mad about it, you know. And I was just like, well, then just don't fucking listen. I get what people are saying, like, oh, who are them to put that on my personal library and, you know, all right. That shit. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
I'll,
but it,
I'll play. Here's Volcano was on that album. Here's a little bit of that.
It's awful. And it was an awful album. It's awful.
The world is better first tonight. You can hurt yourself trying to hold on to what you used to be. I'm so glad the past is all gone.
That does absolutely nothing for me.
Dude, I think that's when they're trying to sound like Coldplay.
Yeah, maybe the Warden probably likes that album.
Yeah, well, you know, he got it for free. He likes anything for free.
We,
if it's free, it's for me.
Like riding our coattails.
Yay. I'm the Warden.
I mean, it's like if we do a, we could do a show on like when great bands release terrible albums, you know, that's probably one of
them. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I would.
Where do we start?
They have a couple albums that are not, that I don't like, but all right. Last one, and then we can wrap up and get the hell out of here. That was 2017, and that was the Fyre Festival, and what a complete ripoff
sham
that was, right? So
all those poor trust fund babies.
I know, right? So these... Ja Rule, the rapper, and some dude named Bill McFarlane tried making this exclusive luxury music event in the Bahamas. It was supposed to be like two weekends in 2017. The prices went from like $500 to like $1,500, and VIP packages were up to like $12,000, and they paid all these like social media influencers to promote it. And then there were supposed to be like 33 music acts like Blink 182 and all this other crap. But then when people got there, the luxury accommodations were just like disaster relief tents, and the food were just cheese sandwiches. There was no cell phone coverage, no internet access. There weren't enough toilets. People got stuck there, stranded there. Total scam.
The documentary's great.
I haven't seen it
to
yet.
See, oh, it's great to see the footage of the trust fund baby struggling. Like I struggled at Woodstock 99 and watching these trust fund babies struggle like in like on the beach. Like make it's you feel hysterical. Good about yourself. Yeah, it's hysterical. You know, I mean, all these concerts I go to and everything, and these trust fund babies, they just go to these big festivals like this one was supposed to be, and they get totally ripped off.
And it's so the guy went to jail for 6 years for fraud, and he had to pay $26 million in restitution. That's how much money he ripped off. The dude just got out of jail, and I swear to God, one of the first things he does when he comes out of jail, he goes,
"What?
Guess what? I'm doing Fyre Festival 2, baby. 2024. Tickets are $500. He hasn't said who's performing yet, but all the presale tickets are sold out already.
You know Ja Rule was going to be there.
Like, how stupid do you have to be to be like, oh, okay, well, this time I'm really serious. I know I just bilked everybody out of $26 million and went to jail for fraud. God,
that the documentary, man, it's like he tried to build his own island out of dirt in the middle of, like, the ocean. Like, oh, I'll just make an island. He was like, I'll just make an island.
Scams and scams and scams. No.
But people bought into it. It only takes, like, a website. And a few names.
Yep. Yeah, there were like celebrities that like the Kardashians were promoting this, and you know, people that were getting paid to talk about it on social media.
Yeah.
And total house of cards. Total bullshit.
Ha ha.
the kid from The Simpsons. So that is 70 years of music scandals in about an hour and 40 minutes. So.
Wow. Scandals. And there was a lot we did not talk about, but maybe next time.
Yeah, there's other things we can. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get emails telling us we missed stuff, but yeah, let's jump into the back end of the show, do some second thoughts, music news, and let's get out of here. Here you go. All right, we got a bunch of second thoughts on some recent episodes. So Dave Sanislow is a buddy of mine. He texted me. He was like, hey, I was listening to your episode on shit music, and do you guys remember the Methods of Mayhem? They were
I do.
Microcosm of everything that was terrible about the 90s, the supergroup that nobody asked for. So that was Tommy Lee's side project.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that cool?
Was it a supergroup?
Not. I don't really think so. Well, let me.
I don't think. I think it was just his side project. Yeah, because he like played guitar on it and he like sang front man. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was more like him being like the front man.
Yeah, I don't notice. I don't recognize anybody else in it, but yeah.
Do we have a song from them?
Yeah, I think we do. Fred Durst and George Clinton are on this.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
$77 million made from watching me come under the sun on my vacation. Shooting my jizzy jism, the one who has I ain't getting paid to entertain you. Got on showers, rocking my polo tape for hours and hours. Yeah, the gorgeous is the very big, bigger than Ron Jeremy.
That sucks.
Dude, really how bad. Much meth was he smoking? That's meth of mayhem.
Yeah, that Dave's that, right, that man. That, been. That was everything that was wrong with like the new metal. No.
Oh, Tommy Lee. I used to look up to him so much as a drummer growing up. And dude, he's a fucking unbelievable motherfucking drummer. But he ruined himself by being a celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah. We could have talked about him and the Pam Anderson video and right, all that other crap.
But, next time.
Yeah. All right. And I got two emails I'll read. So the first one was from Donald. We've read a couple of his emails on the air. He said, "Hey guys, Donald here again. I just heard two terrible songs right back to back that would go great in the electric chair. The first one is Bridge Over Troubled Water. And the second one is Knights in White Satin. Good Lord.
Yes.
I don't know who even sings either one of them, but I'd rather listen to the guy from Star Trek from your last episode than that mess. Nice. I was just wondering if you guys ever heard of Trombone Shorty. He's from New Orleans,
of course.
And I saw him with Government Mule, and I've never heard of him, and he blew me away. I've never seen anyone play a brass instrument like that. He is amazing. Look him up on YouTube. There's some really good stuff. But when I downloaded some of his stuff, it just didn't resonate with me like the live show. He's definitely one you have to see live. Anyway, just checking in. Keep it up, guys.
I've seen Mr. Shorty at least three times.
Have you really?
Yes, he's my man. Awesome. Oh, yeah. He's this dude's not lying. But the thing is like you have to see him live. Nothing compares anything to him live. You can listen to the records, whatever. Live is just a party. His band is unbelievable.
Right on.
My man knows what he's talking about.
Awesome. All right. And then Jimmy Hall, he's written us a bunch of times too. He said, "Hey guys, I just got all caught up on your shows. I had some family health things going on, but I'm back on the road now. The celebrity episode was cool, and as usual, several of those surprised me. You did, however, miss Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time, which is an okay song, and Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind, which I find to be great. Nonetheless, a great show as usual. I went to see ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd last week. They had Uncle Cracker open for them, who I thought was decent, but I didn't like the crowd. I don't think the crowd dug him as much. He was kind of out of place. ZZ Top was amazing, and Skynyrd was fantastic. Elwood Francis, who replaced Dusty Hill and ZZ Top, came out playing the biggest bass guitar I've ever seen. I included a picture. Keep up the good work. As a truck driver, the road can get monotonous at times, but you guys do a great job of breaking that monotony. Keep up the good work and keep on rocking." So,
thank you, my brother. Yeah. You keep on rocking.
Right on, man.
I love it. My catchphrase catches on. Love it.
And then we got some feedback on our doo-wop episode on YouTube. This is from 180 Casper. Said, "The sweet sounds of doo-wop should be called the sound of endless chatter with little music clips. You guys would be a lot better if you played full songs and more of them. Try giving it that real 50s radio sound to go with doo-wop history." And I just said, "Thanks, dude, but we're not a radio station." No. YouTube is a treasure trove of wonderful feedback. All right.
Thanks for listening.
Yep. Music news. The only thing I got, man, was that did you watch that video I sent you of U2 opening the Sphere in Vegas?
That looks amazing.
Yeah, man. So the Sphere is a cutting state of the art, cutting edge state of the art music venue. The whole outside is like an LED screen and the whole inside is an LED screen. So it's like if you're there, it's like, I don't like a planetarium kind of like,
yeah,
you know, just crazy. Go look up, man, like U2 playing there and watch some of the video. I can't even describe it because it won't do justice.
It really is a breakthrough for entertainment.
Yeah. We, all the shows on Pantheon, we have like a chat that we can use to share stuff. And a bunch of the head guy, Peter, was sharing. It was like, holy shit, man, this is amazing. really cool.
Yeah, I heard Fish was going to play there this winter, but they're not. That would
be wild too, I'm sure.
Yeah, but they're not though. No. No, I love. I wish I would go see U2. They're doing a whole residency there.
Yeah, like the Octung
at the Spear.
Yeah,
yeah. Without Larry Mullen.
Yeah, he's ill.
It sucks. He's the main part of the band.
All right, the electric chair. I got something this week.
What do you got? What do you got? What do you got?
Yeah, you know, the electric chair is where we kill a song for being terrible. And I'm going to kill I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly. My opinion of R. Kelly I've already got into, but I hate this song.
I've always hated this song.
I have too, man. We used to
I never liked this movie. I never fucking liked anything about it.
We used to have to play this goddamn soundtrack all the time in the music store. And
I remember.
I wanted to put it on the celebrity thing because Chris Rock sings on one of those songs too on that album. For some reason, it's not on Spotify anymore, and I didn't care enough to go find it on YouTube. This song, like the music sucks.
I just remember him trying to be Quincy Jones in the video, and he had like one of those orchestra needles.
Yeah.
And he's like conducting the whole children's choir, which is fucking sick looking back on it.
Quincy Jones would be a good topic to cover too. But
oh yeah.
He's just super interesting dude. Way more interesting to listen to.
I bet
to
we than. Find a lot of shit on him if we looked it up.
Shit, you know, right? Still alive and he was recording with Sinatra. It's just crazy. But this song is just like the production stinks.
It was like I said, the 90s R&B just was at its worst then.
Yeah. Yeah. There's. Yeah. We could put that
on. It was like having an identity crisis.
Yeah. The music in late 90s of rhythm and blues just is really crappy. They said there's no soul in this at all.
It's way produced. It's overproduced. Just.
Yeah. This. I've never liked this song. All right. Let's just fucking kill it and get out of here.
Yeah. We sentence you to death.
Ugh. I've been waiting for that one for a while. That's been on my notes of things to get rid of. I was glad to finally get
that. Mr. Kelly. You'll never learn, will you?
No, he's learning now. No.
He's somebody's bitch now, isn't he?
Hey, it's all deserved, man. He's, yeah. All right, so that wraps it up for episode 71. Thanks so much for spending some time with us as we talked about the history of scandals in music, man. If you want to hear more of the songs, we only played 30-second clips, but if you want to hear the full versions, we put together a Spotify playlist for everything, but not everything is on there because some of the stuff has been scrubbed from streaming. You had to go find, you know, if you want to hear the Body Count song or the Milli Vanilli, the guy singing clip, you got to go dig it up, but, you know, you can certainly go do that. And while you're doing that, make sure you visit boldfoot.com and also check out our website at prisonersofrockandroll.com. You can follow us on your favorite social media platform. We'd love it if you tell somebody about us. If you shoot us an email, or we'd be happy to send you some stickers. You can email us at show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. We love hearing from everybody. We read all the comments on the air, even the ones that are a little critical of us. And, you know, guys think we should be a radio station instead of a music commentary show. So,
hey. We can only play 30 seconds of each song, or we're not going to have a show.
Right. We'll be in jail, too. We'll be the scandal. No.
Hey, now.
All right, everybody. Well, this was a fun one, brother. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, man. You know what I say?
What's that?
Keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.